The group chats actually provided very vital information for people to withdraw their money because this bank is failing right now, and the people were saved before actually the information hit Twitter. This was already not possible to withdraw their money. No, it was just already too late. It all happened within a couple of hours, like $42 billion dollars, 25% of deposits left within hours, thanks to group chats. Not just Twitter. When it hit Twitter, it was already too late.
Hello, welcome back to Mtambo Desk Podcast. My name is Duke Mtambo, and the following is a conversation with Jakub Shimek, a co-founder of Wezesha DAO and an author of Wisdom Enterprising. In today's episode, I'll be talking with Jakub about his article, Digital Death, under the second season of Daily Balazism series. Jakub, it's great to see you again today.
Good to see you, Duke. I'm happy that we are doing the second season together.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about this. Balaji's Srinivasan argues that the internet increases variance and transforms constants into variables, which can lead to digital death. In your opinion, what does this mean for the banking industry?
Yeah, so you see, with the tech, tech guys or tech sector, making something that was constant into like many options into variables. So you can have a Zoom conference, or you can have an in-person conference. You know, before it was just like, okay, you have a conference. What do you mean? You know, before internet, before actually Zoom became really fast, and Skype, So yeah. After COVID, basically the internet started after COVID, says Balaji. And you have many options like this. You can take Uber, you can, drive your own car, you can take, I don't know, Lyft, and you can own a car, or you don't need to own a car thanks to these kind of startups and in this digital economy. There are many cases like this, and so the technology people, like technological progressives, we can say, like, they are innovating on like this technological, they are producing technological innovations that change constants into variables. And wokes, or like social progressives, they're trying to push like moral innovations, and so both are important, but also like both should go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other, and often technological progress is the prerequisite for a moral kind of progress. So, and this was like this in the past, like it went hand in hand, like the cleanliness, it's next to godliness. It's one example where you had like the improvement in sewage systems in this whole wash area, like water and sanitation, and you had also some kind of moral innovation telling people how to improve their hygiene. And yeah. So this is like this part of turning constants into variables. And the second part is like kind of my kind of way of connecting this idea that the internet increases variance, what Balaji says, into an extreme case where you hit the absorbing barrier, and the result is digital death, So the,
yeah.
And we could see it with the Silicon Valley Bank, where within few hours, $42 billion left the bank. And it was more, it was like 25% of deposits within hours,
A very big bank run, yeah?
Yeah, and it was digital bank run. And, normal kind of community small bank, which is not regulated under these like Basel III kind of regulations, where on the European banks, even the smaller ones, are regulated under this one. But the US had some kind of exception for these like community banks. And so they have only like 6% of their deposits they held on their reserves, they held in cash. versus the big banks that have 10% of these deposits. But we could see it also with Credit Suisse, like some days later, that even if you are like the so-called globally systematically important bank, the G-SIB bank, you can get also wiped out very quickly, and the government needs to come to your rescue, and there is the sale to a competitor, and you just, and you know, this big bank, you know, I was doing some like a consulting kind of freelancer work for, I think it could be UBS, but I'm not sure about Credit Suisse as well. It was just something connected with ESG, you know, like a kind of how good are they with ESG, like with some kind of like corporate social responsibility kind of metrics, you know, and you write some comments, you check, you know, you do some scoring, like kind of as an evaluator for some consulting company.
Yeah.
You know, and they could be great at ESG, but the next day, you know, they're finished. You know, so it's like the opposite of a 0 to 1. It's like 1 to 0. You know, it's like there are, let's say, couple like less than 10 of these like really big banks. So it's not exactly 1 to 0, but you know, it's almost like one. They are definitely oligopolies, and you go from 1 to 0 within hours. So it's crazy, or let's say days. But with Silicon Valley Bank, you know, the issue was that, you know, everybody is on Twitter and everybody is kind of connected, and it's a small kind of well-connected, very online community of venture capitalists from Silicon Valley. But which is really important, I think, really important and interesting. It's the fact that this digital bank run was started on group chats. So actually, when the news hit Twitter, the money was already gone, or you know, it was either difficult or impossible to actually withdraw your money. So all the kind of well-connected people, they spread the message on group chats, and they withdrew their money on before actually the news hit the Twitter, which is very interesting. Going back to our conversations with Alexander Bard, you know, about attentionalism versus capitalism. So, like, with this digital economy, you have this new kind of paradigm of attentionalism. So Twitter is upstream of what Balaji calls the downstream media. But like with the Silicon Valley digital bank run, we saw that actually the really vital information is shared on group chats, and group chats are upstream of Twitter. This is very important, and we can and this is a showcase of actually not something that is upstream of attentionalism, attentionalist economy, which is like, we can call it communitarianism, you know, like the community is important, you know. So if you have like the well-knit high trust community, so you can call it the tribe, or you can, you know, it's not even like a, or a band, you know, or something, you know, it's like, let's say this Dunbar number of 150 people, or I don't know, 100 people today, that you can actually keep like close connections, close contacts with, like building high trust through like personal meetups. You know, these people are really important in your life, and they're more important than, let's say, clicks on Twitter and likes on Twitter and retweets, and because they can save your business, you know, like they literally, those you know, those people actually saved the livelihood, the you know, the years of effort that you are building up, let's say, some business, and it can evaporate within hours. Because the money in the bank is not your money. It's like you're loaning it to the bank, and people didn't have this mental model or something. Yeah, and now they have the clear example of what can go wrong.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the bank run. How can this also happen, and what are the implications for the banking industry?
Yeah. So, like, Balaji presents many graphs of this, like, digital death, which I think is really, like, I never heard of this term before in this kind of context, you know. There is this whole industry of digital death, like, it's focused on actually funeral kind of service, not really funeral services, but it's like if the social media versus the kind of the funeral industry, you know, something like how you preserve your identity or identity of your close ones after you die. So this is like the topic, the digital death. But what Balaji means by it, and he uses it in the context of like something going vertical, but in a like off the cliff, you know, so something goes like not from 0 to 1, but from 1 to 0. And this he calls it like okay, it's kind of constant, and then it's digital at the end, you know. So, and you can see even in my article, I didn't use now some kind of not fancy, but like some kind of AI illustration, like with playground AI. I want to get into Midjourney. It will take me like just a bit. But yeah. I just screenshotted the price chart, the stock price chart of Silicon Valley Bank over the last 6 months, you know, and it was like kind of constant. Okay, there was a before there was like it was some like up and downs, and you know, all the tech stocks and kind of related stocks are down, but it was like over the 6 months it was stable here and there, some very small variations, and then there was this digital death at the end, and which is very sad. I mean, it's not funny,
yeah,
but it was like within, you know, hours or a day, you know, it went like, and it lost like 99 point something persons of its value. So
just like FTX
just like FTX banks are fine, banks are fine, some FTX is fine, no sorry, FTX is fine, deposits are fine, something like that. So this is similar, and with the okay, with the banks you can see similar charts, you know, like yeah, I mean, the Fed can kind of save them. Like, they could be technically insolvent, but they opened this new kind of facility for the banks to kind of to loan to get loans and put up collateral. So these bonds that are now, let's say, 20 or 30% devaluated, they can receive like 100% of that. Of that equity, so they put up the collateral and they get 100%. But the systemic issue didn't go away, because in the US the issue is that the money was leaving the banks well before, like a couple of months before the Silicon Valley Bank crash. So it was like the tip of an iceberg, you know, or kind of like a wake up call, a wake up moment. But the people were moving money because of Fed, you know, because of this like almost 5% kind of interest.
Interest hike. Yeah.
So they were moving it from the bank accounts where they got like almost zero, if not zero, you know, interest on their savings, and they were moving into money market funds. Okay, so in the EU there is this money market fund industry is kind of crippled and crushed, so it's not such a case in the EU is a bit different. But in the US, this is, you know, it's like Balaji calls it TradFi winter, because it's like yield farming. You know, people are very like mercenary with their money, you know, like and this kind of broke the banks and it broke many kind of suppositions and like ideas. You know, people before thought that you are more likely to get divorced than to change your bank, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, but as we discussed, the internet increases variance and turns constant into variables. And actually, as I said, also we discussed before that you know, I have one bank called the VUB that actually doesn't allow crypto transactions because they're, I don't know, they're, I hate them. Okay, so they had I could buy crypto with Coinbase, but not with Kraken. So okay, now they actually also cut off Coinbase, very sad. But luckily, I have another bank which is okay with both for now. Let's see, you know. But the idea is to have many bank options, and then actually, and then once you have digital banking, which is our internet banking, which is like fairly common for a couple of years already, or more than 10 years. Yeah, and actually the analog regulators didn't catch up with this fact that actually you can have a digital bank run within hours or minutes, you know, like and people don't need to stand in a line in front of the bank, and the banks the bank teller would like count the money twice to slow down you know, it's not possible here, because because you know, you can just wire those money in and out very quickly, and yeah, I mean, so it's good to have as many options as possible. You know. So I don't know. I have at least like three for now, and I plan to be even more mercenary. You know, so if this VUB bank, as I said, like we, I'm client there since I was 15. And but I have no love and no more mercy for this bank. You know, I will keep the minimum amount possible or necessary there. I think even I will move like all my payments to the other bank, just like that. I would just like just forget that bank, because if it's anti crypto, it's like anti democratic for me, or anti freedom. You know, it's like the freedom lovers and the Fed lovers, says Balaji. So you know, I mean, if you're anti-crypto, it's like you are building digital Berlin walls or digital lockdowns. Like screw you, you know. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a concerning prospect, and I completely agree. But also, Balaji talks about the importance of digital gold in the in this context. What do you think about Bitcoin as a digital gold and its potential to become the next global reserve currency?
Yeah, so I mean, in 2020, Bitcoin withstood the attack by the Chinese government, which is more capable and ruthless in a hard power sense than the US establishment, the current US establishment. So what might happen is that they will burn as many fiat to crypto bridges as possible, and it will make crypto difficult to access for ordinary Americans, and also for the Western aligned countries, the satellites of the US, if you want to be frank. But there will be other competitors emerging, even interestingly Hong Kong, China are now like inviting all the crypto bros and I mean crypto friendly people to open business there, you know, like they are like, we are open for business.
Yeah, and actually
how can we help they're doing, you know, and the United Arab Emirates the same, you know. So
and now we are seeing also El Salvador president also bringing zero tax law or bill on tech innovations. It is cool.
Yeah, El Salvador is like the best in this. Yeah, of course, like they're very ahead. You know, I think the people will just like catch up later with them. It's like, okay, this is what we want to do, because getting these tech talents, you know, this global tech talent from Kenya, from Nigeria, from India, from anywhere, not just the US, but let's say also from the US, they are like, you get also like these high net worth individuals, and so you combine it like the young tech talent, let's say from India, Nigeria, Kenya, with like these like let's say high net worth individuals, or like the crypto whales or something like that, and what you get is good social defense and technical defense. These are important terms, like, you know, Balaji talks about technical truth and social truth. So the technical truth is the diameter of a virus, you know, it doesn't change based on your opinion. And social truth is like the position of your borders as a country, you know, it's like, you know, the birds, when they fly over the borders, they don't see the borders. It's like kind of It's like a mental software installed in your heads. And
Yeah.
so, but it's like a spectrum between the technical and social. You can have a spectrum. And so Balaji talks about Bitcoin as being between those two kind of poles. So it's also social, because the price of Bitcoin depends on how many people believe that, let's say, the Bitcoin will become reserve currency, the next reserve currency, the ungovernable governor of governments. Yes, Breedlove says. So it's this. It has social aspects, but it also has a technical aspects. This is when the Senator Karen, Senator Warren, says like the Bitcoin is not backed by anything, but actually it's backed by math. You know, you know. So it's not backed by violence as fiat, but it's backed by math. You know, mathematics and energy. It's like an abstraction of some energy rich source. You know. Either renewable or oil, you know, it's like the digital oil or but when we say digital gold, it's also kind of similar metaphor, because it takes energy to dig up the gold, and you know the gold is valuable. You know, the central banks are holding the gold, but the gold has also the gold was defeated by the executive order 6102, I think. Okay, forget the number, but it was like FDR defeated gold, and it was the gold seizure in the 1930s in the US. And also, like, gold is difficult to inspect by regular people, you know, and there could be, you know, some kind of, you know, you need to check
smuggling.
If it's not. If it's there is not something fake added, if it's like, you know, you would need to really like inspect if you get the whole golden bar like correct, and if it's the percentage or whatever the purity, as they say. I mean, I'm not an expert, you know, but like the first is heavy to carry, then the metal detectors will detect it. Then it was already defeated by FDR with his executive order to seize gold. It's difficult to inspect, as we said, it has it's like you can't like cut it into, I don't know, how many millions satoshis, you know. You can't pay like chip it off and just like pay in the shop.
So
But with digital gold, okay, with Bitcoin Lightning especially, you can pay, you know, like I bought pizza in Bratislava with Bitcoin Lightning. I bought a book with Bitcoin Lightning. So you can send Bitcoin Lightning to Kenya within seconds, you know, like, and it's actually much more energy efficient than regular banking, you know. So there was this criticism that was actually refuted. Even like the regular layer one, I mean, the Bitcoin is, according to the new kind of, new research, at least like 50 times more efficient than the banking. If you include like all the ATMs, the you know, all the bank tellers that need to process like these transactions, it's not just like Visa payments. And Balaji would also include like all these like military industrial complex that actually underpins the dollar, because the fiat is underpinned by men with guns, actually. So if you include that and all the wars fought abroad, then it's really energy inefficient fiat compared to Bitcoin. But now if you go to layer two, like Bitcoin Lightning, you are getting into like a million fold more efficient.
Actually, there's a joke. There's a ongoing joke about Bitcoin Lightning passing the proof of granny. You know, proof of granny, so grandmother, so like even grandmother, they can use that technology, Bitcoin Lightning, to send such between each other with, say, for example, even with the innovation by Machakura's, now you can even use USSD with the feature phones. So it's not like internet banking, where like a grandmother cannot do all that process, you know, but with Bitcoin Lightning, it's just scanning, you know, and it goes very you receive the sats from your side. Yeah, but so what Balaji is trying to say here is we are lucky to have Bitcoin as digital gold, which can act as a hedge against the risks posed by the banking industry's digital disruption. But the Chinese yuan, on the other hand, is a more dystopian option, And as it's controlled by the government and lacks the decentralization that Bitcoin offers. But yeah, but the adoption of Chinese yuan can have a significant impact on the global economy and political system. What do you think about the role of regulators in the digital world?
Right, so you know, like the issue is like the school of fish strategy, which is like this global harmonization kind of problem, which is like one of the biggest problems facing humanity, according to Balaji Srinivasan.
Mimetic.
Yeah, mimetic is like the mimetic theory, but it's like everybody is doing the same, and then like so everybody was buying these long term. US treasuries, you know, and now everybody is facing the same budget hole or the balance sheet hole in their equity. So in their balance sheet. So and similarly, like with this the Chinese versus Bitcoin or smart regulators. So okay. What you have is like these analog regulators that are not ready for the digital world. The best kind of metaphor here is the taxi medallion inspection once a year versus Uber's inspection every couple of minutes or seconds, you know, like it's like continuous, you know, because you get the two-sided marketplace, the rating, the five-star rating of drivers and of passengers, you get like a geolocation, you get like so many like artificial intelligence monitoring things. So what you want is like a marketplace, like digital marketplace, where you have a smart regulator, you know, like Balaji has this whole book of the network state about like how this kind of new hybrids between the state and the network can emerge, and so you want the competition, the global competition between smart regulators. So you want to have, I don't know, you want to have countries like Palau coming up with like digital ID, like the you know, like the crypto, like putting your ID and your e-residence on chain. You have, as we discussed before, you have Rwanda doing innovation in drone delivery. You have, I don't know, Singapore or some other places like doing various kind of innovations in fintech, in autonomous driving, and this and that. So you want these like special innovation zones for, you know, special innovation zones that's and smart regulators. So it doesn't mean like kind of less affair. It's more like a pragmatic approach, you know, and also something what I call like pragmatic antagonism. So like Balaji would call it like a re-centralized center, or you know, like something that's like some people would call it like radical center, but it's something like the Lee Kuan Yew of Singapore, where he can't be called like the leftist or the rightist. You know, he has like many, it's like patchwork of many various kind of not just ideologies, but it's just like doesn't matter if it's a black cat or a white cat, it's important that it catches mice, you know, so they have, I don't know, some kind of like social or public housing, but they are like also like number one in doing business index, you know, or very close to the top of doing a business index. So you could have like many, many inspirations, but I call it like pragmatic antagonism. Pragmatic means like what works, and antagonism is that you want to be constantly opposed to, let's say, maximalists in various tribes. So like you want to be opposed against like the nationalists, the socialists, wokes, you know, even Bitcoin maximalists when they are like toxic in their behavior, you know. So you want to be like kind of open but also opposed, and pragmatic meaning like testing what works and then adopting what works, like, you know, doing running like parallel small scale experiments and then adopting what works and like and scaling it. So
yeah, I completely agree with you. I think the current also regulatory system is not sufficient to keep up with the innovations in fintech and crypto. But do you think the legacy financial system can adapt to this also digital world?
Yeah, well, the problem is that they are doing half measures. That's from Breaking Bad, you know, but it's like, you know, they are half analog, half digital. And then this digital part is creating this digital death problem. You know, they're like, Balaji says it's a com. It's like if you had like a Gmail, you are sending a mail by, I mean, email by Gmail, and on the back end it's being printed out and put on a Pony Express and delivered by horse for 2 days, and then scanned and uploaded. You know, so this is like a very good analogy of the current banking system, where it seems like if you are using some nice fintech front end, some neobank, it seems like instant, but on the back end it's actually travels like 2 days. You know, it's some kind of similar thing. And actually this is like, for example, if you use like former TransferWise or Wise, you know, you can see like one day it works like almost instantly, and another day it takes like 2 days. And if you have like the Robin Hood situation during the GameStop saga, you get like too many of these requests and the system crashes. And now it's the same thing with the digital death of the banks. You know, they are like, because they are the scanner version of digitalization. So they are at the scanner stage of digitalization, what Balaji calls it. And what you want is digitally native solutions. So Bitcoin is digital gold. And you want digital gold or digital, I mean, to avoid the digital death, you know. So the choice is digital gold or digital death. More abstractly, the choice is between digitally native solutions and these kind of half measures, which are
Analog,
which will lead to ruin. Yeah, because, yes, so these scanner versions are obviously not enough, like, because do you give people expectations of they are living in the, I don't know, the first world, the new glorious future where you have you can send money instantly to someone, but it's actually not true. You know, it's like still, it's just like a shiny front end on something that is really like a legacy system actually. It's run on Coltran or what's the you know, it's like this what's the language that it's coded in. You know, it's like the people who developed these systems are literally retiring as we speak. You know, it's like it's a serious issue. And actually they wanted to I heard Caitlin, what's her name, the second name, Young, you know, the from from Twitter, you know, this the lady who Custodia Bank who wanted to I think Caitlin
Caitlin,
right. So and she spoke about this, like January 3rd, the bank regulators issued some kind of statements that the banks shouldn't use open and distributed global open and distributed protocols. And she thought like there is a typo, that's like some kind of midwit lawyer was like writing it, and because they forgot to include like blockchain protocols, you know. She was like, what, because the open and distributed protocol is also like internet, basically the internet protocol, or you know. But after all these like crazy weeks that we experienced, like now a couple of weeks, actually she said like just now she was on a Twitter Spaces with Balaji just like a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, the Balaji speaks.
And she says that she said, I mean, that actually maybe it was intentional, basically what the regulators said to the banks, like you shouldn't use internet, you know? It's because it's because this digital death is imminent. This is the risk, you know. So I don't know, they should get back to horses, or I mean, to just like really offline banking, you know, basically just getting people into the bank, you know, so the people who stand in the line if they want to get their money out, and then the bank teller can count the money not once or twice, but let's say four times, if they can count the money four times, so they can slow the withdrawals, and they can, it can be all nice, and there is all there, without all these like internet shenanigans and people wanting the immediate payments, like it's crazy, you know. I mean, compared, like even compared to like, I mean, M-Pesa is like still, I think, ahead, and the mobile banking is still ahead, but they really want to go into pre-mobile banking, pre-internet banking era of, I don't know, it's just like
crazy.
It's really something like going back to the horses and carriages.
Yeah, very true. Balaji also talks about the hierarchical relationship between group chats and Twitter. I think you already mentioned a bit briefly about it, but what do you think
I think
about
I think this was more of my point. He talks about like Twitter being upstream of what he calls the downstream media, and like based on our discussion, like your discussion together with Alexander Bard, where I was also like like co-host with you, and we discussed this attentionalism versus capitalism and versus something like communitarianism or tribalism, or as you want to call it, as another paradigm that even might succeed attentionalism. And I think this is like the clear example of where the group chats actually provided very vital information for people to withdraw their money, because this bank is failing right now, and the people were saved before actually the information hit Twitter. This was already not possible to withdraw their money. You know, it was just already too late. It all happened within a couple of hours, like $42 billion dollars, 25% of deposits left within hours, thanks to group chats. You know, not just Twitter. When it hit Twitter, it was already too late.
Okay.
And sorry, but back to your question. Sorry.
So just saying, like, what do you think about the role of group chats and Twitter in spreading information in the digital world, and how does this relate to the banking industry?
And spreading information or disinformation?
Spreading information.
Okay. Right. I mean, you know, they were, I think it was like Credit Suisse executive or or someone from Credit Suisse, they like kind of blamed Twitter for like the downfall of Credit Suisse, you know, and this is like the global systematically important bank. So it's, and it was like the Basel III regulated bank, you know. And they didn't make it, you know. So so and he blamed Twitter for it, and you know, like we are really grateful with Elon Musk that we have a freer Twitter now, like with Elon Musk,
and nowadays,
you know, or better regulated, smartly regulated, with more free discourse there, because this was not the case during COVID, and we saw like the lockdowns were too long. As a result, kids suffered mental health issues, and other people suffered, you know. So we are happy for Twitter, but actually these group chats, okay, and it's also happening in Slovakia and stuff, you know, it's they're clearly upstream, because people, the internet retribalizes people, retribalizes the world, says Balaji, like echoing Marshall McLuhan. And so you get this group chat, and actually they might be like in some other jurisdictions, you know, like, I don't know, Telegram, it's like not controlled by the US establishment. Because you know you can actually censor also also these group chats, right? I mean, but it's difficult if you have like a variety of them, you know, and some are like open source, and it's not panacea, because as we discussed before with the Restrict Act, you know, they can, you know, they can like scare you off like using VPN to access some kind of like services based in countries that they deem being their adversaries, so they can kind of try to do the digital lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
But and they can even like try to sound harsher than China, you know, like we did these 20-year sentences, 1 million fines, and this and that. So it's a bit crazy. Yeah, but let's see. I think, yeah, let's see. So, but the group chats, like you know, like I started to use Telegram only because of this BitSignal. Actually, there was like, yeah, you know, just to get some information from another channel, and I found out that my mom, who is already a grandma, you know, she's on the Telegram. She's like, "What are you doing here?" You know, and so you see, like, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's you it's good to have as many as possible, but the idea is not like what tools are you using, but like what people are you connected with, you know. It's important, because if you are connected, let's say, with people who are who don't have this like clear like signal to or this good like signal to noise ratio, who are like, it's like too much noise, let's say, then you will get like not correct information, or like kind of information that is more noise than signal. But like if you have like high signal kind of community, high trust community, and a community that can spot weak signals before they become mainstream, then you have a clear advantage, you know, because if everybody is, I don't know, selling, then probably you shouldn't be selling. If everybody is buying, probably you should be selling, you know. It's like, so like this anti-mimetic behavior. So it's good to have like these high trust, close-knit communities, and to be in these group chats. So,
I also like the example that you gave, that the current global economic and political system can be metaphorically represented by a wooden ball filled with marbles. As the ball experiences more shocks and hits, while its walls become thinner and shorter, eventually causing some marbles to fly out instead of returning to the into their attractor basins. But the question is where these marbles will land, and it's essential to for both sovereigns and individuals to choose between getting into digital gold or facing the risk of digital death.
Yeah. So it's like our dollar, devaluated dollar, the digital dictatorship of renminbi, or the digital freedom of the digital gold, Bitcoin. So Bitcoin as a shelling point, right? Like, but so now it's this time it's just Bitcoin in this like digital social war, you know, this anti-crypto sentiments that we feel now, that we feel are affecting us now, you know, these anti-crypto regulators that are like trying to burn this crypto to fiat bridges. So in time of digital war, it's just Bitcoin, but on the other side of this, like, okay, we are polycoiners, we believe in many coins, as Balaji, you know, so we hope for Ethereum or Solana and others to survive this. For now it's just like Bitcoin. I think getting as many people into this like lifeboat of Bitcoin, you know, it's just like diversifying some of your savings into Bitcoin, just in case like this system implodes, you know, and you will not be able to buy in Bitcoin, but you will have a devaluated savings, you know, like many countries experienced it, Czechoslovakia, the former country where, you know, now we, I live in Slovakia, before it was Czechoslovakia, it had the monetary reform, meaning like stealing people's savings. And so, you know, many countries experienced times like this. So, and idea, okay, the idea is you don't need to buy Balaji's vision or the doom scenario that in 90 days the Bitcoin will hit $1 million and there will be like hyperinflation. You don't need to buy it. It could be like 900 days, or it could be later, or it could be sooner. But it's also not wise to be just betting on the Lindy effect of everything staying the same. You know, horses were used for thousands of years, and then in a couple of years you get cars, you know. And so the same thing, it's good to be like optimistic, but it's good to be a paranoid, you know. So it's like the only paranoid survive, you know, only the paranoid survive. So it's good to to put some of the savings or some of the income, you know, like to save some of the income in BTC, and and use the Bitcoin Lightning for some transactions, like to practice it with your friends. And and also this is actually also, as we discussed with the group chats, and this communitarianism being upstream of attentionalism, upstream of Twitter, which itself is upstream of the downstream media, as Balaji calls them. And also, like, what might happen is like, okay, so the capitalism, the fiat to crypto bridges will be burned, you know. Then you have like the attentionalism, you have, you know, you try to sound the alarm on Twitter or something. But even, let's say, you know, even if this doesn't work or something, then you still have the community, you know, you have people, the parallel society, the parallel economy, where you can still, you know, make friends, get make close friends, and trade crypto with them, you know, like, so when you need it, you know, because sometimes you might need fiat, you know, to pay your bills, or I don't know, to buy something with fiat, but you also want to save in Bitcoin at least some percentage of your savings, you know, depends on you how bullish you are on it, but let's say at least like 2 or 5% of your savings maybe put in this like digital gold, and if you are more bullish then more, you know, but it's not the financial advice, it's just for entertainment and educational purposes only. But yeah, but this is the case for like this digital tribalism. We are all Bitcoin maximalists now, as Balaji says. But let's not be toxic Bitcoin maximalists, but like let's be positive, and let's build communities around it, you know. So building trust, a high trust, parallel societies, tribes, around Bitcoin as digital gold.
Wow, that's a great conclusion, Jakub. I'm very, very honored, I mean, to have you on the Mtambo desk, and for giving us this insightful conversation.
Duke, thank you that we are doing this season 2 of Daily Balagisms together. It's been 42 episodes, you know, like 40 in the first series. Now we are doing the second one. And it's crazy. I hope we are enjoying it. I mean, I know we are enjoying it, but I hope also our listeners are enjoying it more and more, and we are getting better bit by bit. So, yeah. And what a times to be alive.
Yeah. It's true.
So spread the bit signal. buy some Bitcoin, get it off exchanges, and move to Bitcoin friendly jurisdictions or crypto friendly jurisdictions.
Yeah, and I'd also say it's very essential to adapt to the digital world and choose the right path to avoid the risk of digital debt.
Yeah, digital gold or digital debt.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed listening to Mtambo Desk podcast, don't forget to subscribe, give this episode a thumbs up, and be sure to come back next week for another episode. Until then, this is Duke Mtambo, and don't forget to do good always.